Hey friend, do you want to offer meaningful learning solutions that create behavior change, fit in the flow of work, and yield real results for your nonprofit? If yes, this is the podcast for you. Join me as I explore instructional design and leadership development best practices, as well as change management, belonging, and influence. If we haven't met yet, I'm Heather, and I've been in your shoes. I'm a learning and development consultant and founder of Skill Masters Market. Before starting my business, I led learning and leadership development initiatives for a large national nonprofit. I know what it's like to need to develop your staff quickly and effectively and to build the relationships and cut through the organizational layers to be successful. And I'm bringing all of that to you in this podcast. So block your calendar, turn off your Teams or Slack chat, and let's dive in. It's learning for good. Hello, friend, and welcome to this week's episode of Learning for Good. If your nonprofit or association is undergoing organizational change, you will want to listen in to today's episode. We keep hearing that burnout is at an all-time high, yet changes are still happening and can sometimes add to our stressors. That's why today I've invited Mandy Sharp-Eisinger to join me to talk about staff well-being and what you can do to help prevent burnout, even in the midst of a change. Let's dive in. It's Learning for Good. All right, so we know burnout is at an all-time high. It's grabbing the attention of nonprofit learning and development leaders all over the country. And well-being has become a focus so that we can support our staff better. My guest, Mandy, works at the Johnson Center for Philanthropy at Grand Valley State University, and one of her research areas is well-being. So I'm so excited to hear what she has to share with us today. Mandy joined the Johnson Center as a program manager in April 2020. She facilitates sector-wide learning and professional development programs as part of the center's learning services team. With a strengths-based approach to personal and organizational development, Mandy is committed to facilitating meaningful and measurable results, whether supporting boards and youth advisory councils or advocating for well-being in the nonprofit sector. And for those of you who are strengths finders fans, she's a developer, connectedness, belief, responsibility, and empathy as her strengths. Mandy's fieldwork on nonprofit well-being is recognized in Nonprofit Quarterly, Nonprofit Hub, the WGVU Morning Show with Shelley Irwin, Giving Compass, and the Chronicle of Philanthropy. You are likely to find her testing new team-building activities with the Johnson Center staff and with a stack of Post-its in her possession at all times. What drives Mandy is global to local connectedness. She served 12 years in nonprofit program management in Chicago, leading regional community engagement strategy with UNICEF USA's education, advocacy, and fundraising programs. She led UNICEF USA's Global Citizenship Fellowship Program in national recruitment, training, coaching, and professional development, and is humbled to be among more than 75 fellows and alumni working in the social impact space around the world. She now serves on the board of directors at Treetops Collective, a cross-cultural organization that co-creates spaces of belonging for new American women in West Michigan. Mandy holds a Bachelor of Science in Family Community Services from Michigan State University and a Master's degree in Public Service Management from DePaul University. She is adjunct faculty at GVFU. Outside the Johnson Center, Mandy is likely spending time with her family and their rescue dog, eating ice cream, and playing in Lake Michigan. Welcome, Mandy.
Thank you for that beautiful introduction. And I'm so happy to share the space with you today and talk about well-being, something that is very important to me and very important to the listeners today.
I'm so excited that you're here. I can't wait to hear what you have to share with us. But I have to know, before we dive in, because this is definitely related to my well-being, what is your favorite flavor of ice cream?
Oh, I discovered the Tonight Dough. It's a Jimmy Fallon flavor of Ben and Jerry's. I discovered it when I was pregnant. It is a chocolate cookie dough peanut butter mashup that is beyond life-changing. So I would highly recommend the Tonight Dough from Ben & Jerry's.
Ooh, okay, I'm going to have to check that out. Thanks for that recommendation. All right, so Mandy, I like to get to know the podcast guests and allow my audience to get to know the podcast guests a little bit as well. So can you start by telling us a little bit about your career journey?
I will. And you covered so much of it in that really thoughtful bio. So thank you for that warm introduction. What I will say is that at a young age, I discovered that I had a role to play in something for social good, though I probably couldn't name it at the time. It was probably around the age of 10 that I started volunteering in the community soup kitchen. And I was campaigning to save the whales and end civil war in Somalia. I had a lot of big dreams and big visions as a kid. And I would say that what my opa called that bleeding heart is what ultimately led me to study family community services at Michigan State and later nonprofit management at DePaul University in Chicago. And the first 12 years of my career were in Chicago, where I worked across the nonprofit sector, primarily at UNICEF USA. I absolutely loved that work, supporting global campaigns for children. But it was there that I learned that I loved learning and I loved sharing the love of learning with the UNICEF community and helping to equip active global citizens who could take action in a meaningful way. Now at the Johnson Center, I get to put that learning to practice and really play in the learning and development space with nonprofit leaders, board members, grant makers, volunteers, all learners across the professional development spectrum. So it was absolutely fulfilling to work on global campaigns for the world's children. But I learned at UNICEF USA that I loved learning in the nonprofit sector and I loved training and equipping others to take action. And that nudged me to where I am today at Johnson Center, where I support sector-wide learning for nonprofits, grant makers, board members, volunteers, and everyone in between that is looking to learn about the philanthropic sector. But really bridging to the topic of today, well-being, I think looking back at my career, the thread that consistently is woven in my path, whether at UNICEF or here at the Johnson Center, or in my current volunteer work, is well-being. And like many of us, I have experienced and witnessed that deep burnout in the nonprofit sector. It is one of my core research areas that started during COVID. It's really evolved in the last 3 years. And the hope is to shift from a conversation on self-care to truly redefining the nonprofit sector and to find an opportunity for nonprofit well-being to be infused in the way that we lead nonprofit organizations, in the way we fund nonprofit organizations, and in the way we drive policy change across the nonprofit sector.
I love that. I love your focus on well-being and how you can look back at your career and see how that has woven through. I think our careers are so funny that way. And so it's nice when you can look back and see how things start to make sense and come together. Mm-hmm. And I love that your focus is really a holistic approach to well-being. And it's not just a, hey, let's offer a well-being program. So we're hearing well-being, 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 right? I'm hearing it from nonprofit learning and development leaders. And so tell me a little bit about that. Why is well-being such an important focus right now and a current 2023 work trend?
Great question. Well, in the year 2019, burnout was named in the World Health Organization's International Classification of Diseases. So burnout being labeled a disease seems quite strange to see that as an official classification of disease. But it is. And I think well-being and the buzzword of well-being is in response to that, but it's also in response to the trauma of COVID, the trauma of racial inequity that we have seen over the last 3 years and been able to name. And knowing too that well-being practice is something that has often been lacking in the nonprofit sector. You may know the author, Beth Cantor. She talks about the scarcity mindset, that we are often competing for limited resources, both financial, human, even physical resources. And we know that burnout affects the bottom line. There's a statistic that turnover at an organization can cost anywhere from 16 to 213% of an annual salary. It's 16% to 213% of an annual salary is the cost of turnover. So turnover, yes, indeed, impacts bottom line, but it also impacts morale. It impacts culture. There is huge loss of talent that we're seeing from what you're also probably seeing trending as the great resignation and quiet quitting. Turnover is high and it's very much linked to burnout. But we can now also acknowledge that well-being is not just about bottom line. It's not a box to check. It's not about offering yoga and ping pong and flexible office hours. The bottom line is that well-being is rest. And this means that organizations must see rest as a human right, not as a reward. You know, you and I, Heather, talked about in our introductory chat about just returning from vacation. And oftentimes it is named as a reward that you put in your time, you get some time off. But to shift that narrative and say that rest is a human right, that's a powerful shift in the narrative. It's an important distinction. You might follow sociologist Adam Grant as well. I'm a big fan of his work. He just noted that vacations and perks aren't cures for exhaustion. That the major issue is that we're so overloaded with complex jobs, perhaps even multiple jobs and stressful tasks, that it is not just something that a vacation or a benefit can solve. And this overload is often distributed onto those who are historically or systemically marginalized from the BIPOC community. You'll hear from an advocate like Trisha Hershey from the Knapp Ministry. She has a statement in her book, "At the end of the day, for us to imagine a new world that centers liberation, equality, and justice, rest is going to have to be our center foundation." And that is powerful.
Wow, that really is powerful. And to shift that narrative and to think about the busyness and then prioritizing the rest, right? And for so many years, being busy is what people wanted. Being busy is what was rewarded. And in fact, if you were busy and you were doing it, you probably got more work to make you more busy, right? So to shift that narrative and say that rest is what is required, is it really is a huge shift, and it really can be a powerful shift. So over the past couple of years, obviously there have been a lot of, you know, organizational changes that have happened. People have experienced a lot of personal change over the past couple of years. And so, you know, I think about like just the impacts of COVID. Let's say that an organization went through COVID and they laid off some of their staff in that process. The staff who remained probably had more work added to their plate. And in addition to that, there were a lot of organizational culture changes that happened because they went most likely from an in-person environment or a hybrid environment to fully remote, where everyone was working remote, which just impacts the organizational culture. And then as organizations started to rehire, they're bringing in new people, that impacts organizational culture. It impacts the work that you're doing because you're likely having to onboard and train someone new in your team and your organization. And so it's really adding to that busyness in a lot of ways. And the organizational changes just continue. They just continue to happen. They continue to layer on. So thank you for helping us shift our mindset away from busyness being the expectation and being rewarded to rest. So tell me, how does staff well-being impact the other things that are happening within the organization?
Thank you, Heather. And I absolutely cannot take credit for the idea of rest. There are some thought leaders that would absolutely credit Trisha Hershey being one from the Knapp Ministry, who speaks so boldly about the power of rest and rest being a right, a human right. And I think it's important that we continue to share that and to share her perspective on that as well.
Do you wish you could connect with other nonprofit learning and development leaders? I know what it feels like to want someone to bounce ideas off of and to learn from, someone who really understands you and your work. Imagine if you could have a simple way to meet people in the field, ask questions, and share information. That's why I created the Nonprofit Learning and Development Collective, where nonprofit, L&D, talent management, and DEI leaders can connect with each other quickly and easily in a virtual space. When you join this community, you will walk away with a new, diverse, and powerful network and a sounding board for your staff development needs. So if you're ready to exchange ideas and collaborate with your peers, come join the Nonprofit L&D Collective.
Okay, so your question on how does staff well-being impact things happening across the organization? There's another beautiful TED Talk by Amelia Nagasaki, and she mentions that the cure for burnout is not self-care. So we know, yes, a one-hour yoga session or a cup of tea is often the image we see when we look at burnout and well-being. I think we need to challenge that narrative as well. But Amelia Nagasaki, again, to quote her, she says, quote, "The cure for burnout is not self-care. It is all of us caring for each other. We can't do it alone and we need each other," end quote. So this means that there's a community approach and the workplace is a community where we spend so much of our time, whether that is in person, virtually, in a remote or local environment. This means that a community approach, especially in the workplace, is the way forward. And this is where we can see where workplace culture must move with intention. So well-being practice underpins organizational culture. And you can probably think of a time or a season at an organization when culture was very unhealthy, perhaps even toxic. And maybe you can even imagine or recall the health of your people power and how challenging it is to navigate a difficult culture or a difficult season. We've heard lately, again, the influence of the great resignation or quiet quitting. There's also a new phenomenon called quiet promoting, where a person is doing multiple jobs at once. And I think we need to pay attention to those phenomenons and press against those as well. And I wouldn't say those are necessarily new, but we're talking about them more intentionally. Well-being is not a band-aid. It's not a fix-all to have a well-being program or a one-hour well-being workshop or to say, hey, listen to this great podcast with Heather and Mandy. We're not going to fix it all, but it's an important pillar and practice that does influence culture. So a couple of things that I would ask about well-being programs, and to really challenge whether your well-being programs are embedded in your culture. Do your staff show up with clear expectations of their role? Are they able to complete their task in a healthy environment? Do they have access to the resources they need to be successful? One of the challenges that I've seen across nonprofit organizations is, what is the accountability framework? Are we held accountable? And if we aren't held accountable, what needs to shift? Early on in our research at the Johnson Center, we simply asked nonprofit staff, what do you need to be successful? What do you need for your own self-care and well-being in your workplace? And for some, it was as simple as a comfortable desk chair, a set of noise-canceling headphones, to have greater flexibility during the day, to have access to sunlight. Basic human needs that the workplace can and should offer, not simply to increase productivity or to increase profit, but to support the people power behind the mission. Some of these innovations are very simple and low cost.
Right. And it all started with asking them what they wanted or what would help them. I love that. I think I often say that with learning and development, I take a strategic yet compassionately human-centered approach. And I think that's so much part of it, right? Just asking and learning about the people that you are designing training for or other types of learning solutions. And the same would obviously apply to well-being. Just asking them can be really helpful and getting to know what their needs are or what they believe their needs to be. So we've talked about Tricia Hershey's work on rest, and we've talked about Amelia Nagasaki's community approach, community support, caring for each other, being a part of staff well-being as well. And then you talked also about making sure that expectations are clear, there's a healthy environment to perform the work, and that everyone has the resources they need to do their jobs, as well as just simply asking. But for those who are listening and are looking for a couple of ideas to get started, what can a nonprofit do to improve staff well-being?
That's a great question. I put together a couple of recommendations based on the research that we've done and what we've heard from sector leaders across nonprofits. The first, as we've discussed, is to ask employees what they need. It is not a one-size-fits-all approach. And many organizations have something called an EAP or Employee Assistance Program. Though I have found in many of the organizations where I have worked, there has been an employee assistance program, but I have very rarely used it. And that statistic is true across the board. In an employee well-being study conducted by Gallup, only about 24% of workers participated in the wellness programs at their companies, and just 12% said they helped their well-being. So there is absolutely a disconnect in participating in the well-being programs and in their effectiveness. So that means we're doing it wrong. We need to determine what we can do differently and ask employees what they need. And to also evaluate the effectiveness of the employee assistance programs. There are incredible programs that I have recommended to staff many times, especially in times of crisis or in times of just needing a little extra support. But I think there's often a lack of understanding of employee assistance programs as well. And there's a fear that if they use or access employee assistance programs, that there might be some type of punitive response or a lack of confidentiality. There's a general fear around using those types of programs when they're really there to help. So that's the first tip. Ask employees what they need and offer it. Number two is to model well-being at the leadership level. Gallup cites a 48% greater likelihood that people with low engagement and well-being will leave an organization. And we want to keep talent. We want to keep talent well. And leadership modeling that well-being is such a critical step. I know when my supervisor is emailing while they're on vacation, I'm likely to think that I have to model that behavior and check my inbox frequently when I'm on vacation. And the same is true. It's very much contagious to even simply email while you're on vacation. Others think they have to practice that when rest is truly what is needed during that time. So leadership really does need to set the communication norm. Number three, truly be flexible and communicate expectations. We see this happening a lot right now in 2023 as we return to the office and shift the way we were working during COVID. Many organizations are asking us at the Johnson Center for support in how they return to the office and build their hybrid work culture. So we're doing a few evaluations on what that might look like to be effective. Many organizations will have to ask, what is the value of in-person collaboration versus remote collaboration? There are benefits to both. One piece of evidence that we have seen that has improved well-being is not commuting. To commute from one level of your home to the other or one space to the other is quite a different experience than an hour in traffic. So it's better for well-being, it's better for the environment. And I can see tremendous benefits in many of the organizations that we work with in retaining talent because they are able to work from anywhere in the world for that matter. So truly being flexible and communicating those expectations. Number four, this is a big one. Building relationships with funders that understand unrestricted operational support and shifting the narrative that nonprofit staff must be scrappy and even self-sacrificing to be effective in their organizations. I am part of a small nonprofit who just recently received unrestricted operational support, a multi-year grant. And you would think they were given the sun and the moon and the stars. It was just an absolutely culture-changing gift. And for more organizations to see that the people power is where they want to invest and to provide that unrestricted operational support that an organization can use toward investing in their people, that will improve well-being. Similar to that, number five is put well-being in the budget. Your budget is where your values show up. So consider how you will put well-being in your budget. Is it a paid staff well-being day off? Is it taking a closer look at your family leave policy? Where will you put well-being in your budget? Where will you prioritize and invest in well-being? Number six is perhaps one of my favorite tips as well, and it stems from the Johnson Center's 11 Trends in Philanthropy report that we launched just this past winter. And that is to consider new models of working. We've discovered through the 11 Trends in Philanthropy report at the Johnson Center, new organizational structures and models that are toppling the traditional staff pyramid. We've seen an emerging trend of co-leadership and distributed leadership models and their benefits. So imagine what it would look like to have co-leadership across a high-performing nonprofit organization where there's not just one person that is leading the charge, but two to three, we've even seen four in some situations where that leadership is shared and carried in a strengths-based manner where individuals can truly lean in to what they do well and allow their peers and colleagues to support them in the areas where perhaps they might not be as strong. I just observed a small nonprofit organization here in West Michigan that transitioned from a single executive director model to now three executive directors, and they are all thriving, doing what they do best. Now, that did not happen overnight, and we wouldn't encourage those decisions to happen overnight or in a very swift manner, but really breaking down what it looks like to lead an organization is another step toward well-being. Shifting that responsibility in a distributed manner so that it is not just one person in an often lonely, under-resourced, and multi-hat wearing role. Two more tips, Heather. Number seven is to expect to iterate. A well-being practice or a well-being program is not a one-size-fits-all. And I would recommend to look at your existing programs, look where you are today, and start there. And that would be my final tip, is to start small, start here, start where you are, and center equity in the decisions that you're making. And that first step is the best one to take.
It always is, right? That first step. And I think when you started your recommendations, one of the first steps that you mentioned was asking. So even if the learning and development leader who's listening right now is thinking, well, we don't have unrestricted funding right now, or it's not in the budget at the moment, right? There are still steps that they can take. They can start here, start small, and they can center equity in that conversation. So thank you so much for sharing all of those tips. And definitely things to work toward over the next couple of years for sure.
Thank you, Heather.
So, yeah, thank you, Mandy. Thanks for joining me today. So we have so much to learn from each other, and it's one of the things that I hope to bring to you as a Learning for Good listener. That's also why I created the Nonprofit Learning and Development Collective over on LinkedIn. It's a place for us to share with and learn from one another. A powerful, diverse network of learning and development, talent management, and DEI leaders. We tackle topics just like this one each week. Grab the link to the group in the show notes, and I'll see you there. See you next time on Learning for Good.
Hey friend, was this episode helpful for you? Did you like what you heard? Do you want more content like this? Here are three things you can do hit subscribe, leave a review on Apple Podcasts or your podcast app of choice. Share this episode with a colleague. This means so much to me personally. I read every review, but it also helps me learn what content you like most so I can create more of what you want. All right, turn that Teams or Slack chat back on when you're ready, and I'll see you next time on Learning for Good.